Good afternoon. Thank you. Sorry. Just trying to get my act together, but we could be here for a month. It is December 15th, 2021, Rancho Marietta Community Service District Special Board Meeting. It's a 1 o'clock session, so we are about to begin. Amelia, would you do a roll call, please?
President Mabee.
Here.
Director Janko.
Here.
Director Butler.
Here.
Director Merchant.
Here.
Director Paul.
Here.
Welcome to the meeting.
Yeah, thanks, Martin, for gracing us. Item number two, consider for adoption of the agenda. We've added an item, and I want to read it here. It's item number 10. It's declare a contracting emergency under public contract code 22050A1. Obviously, everybody already knows what that is. I won't go into detail. And district code 4.01 and authorize the general manager or designate to execute a contract for emergency valve replacement. When we get to this item, it requires a 4/5 vote, and it will be an action item. With that said, I would like to adopt the agenda as is. If I could have a second, please.
I'll second it.
Thank you, Director Butler. Roll call vote. Director Mabee.
Aye.
Director Janko.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Merchant.
Yes.
Director Pohl.
Aye.
Thank you.
Moving to number three, consent calendar. Before I make a motion to adopt, do any of the board members have any questions on the consent calendar? Not seeing or hearing, I make a motion to adopt the consent calendar. Can I have a second, please?
Second.
Thank you, Director Merchant. Roll call, Director Mabee.
Aye.
Director Janko.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Merchant.
Yes.
Director Pohl.
Aye.
Thank you.
I don't get a lot of latitude as board president, but I'll throw this out just because I see some folks in the audience, and I don't know if they're here to comment on a specific item or just something in general. So if I don't have any issues with other board members, I'd like to move, where is it, public comment number 7 to the front, and we can address whatever we have there if we don't.
Okay.
Sure. So if there's somebody in the audience that has a comment or wants to make a statement, we're going to do the public comments now. If not, it'll just go as agendized from that standpoint. Hi, Mike. How are you?
State your name for the record, Mike.
Mike Martell.
Welcome.
Basically, I want to make sure I have it on record. I send the general manager an email request, a public information request under the Freedom of Information Act. And basically, it's specifically any and all documents pertaining from August of 2017 through December of 2018. And I've done a little research. I think the requirement is I have to list the dates involved in the Freedom of Information. I've gone back to the webpage and the different minutes, and I find very, very little.
Hold on 1 second, Mike. Normally, we scrub all public comment afterwards, you know, so it can't be tracked, but it appears we're doing it right now, so hold on.
So the only reason I tried to print it, but my printer's out of ink today, so I emailed it to Tom just a minute ago. I want to put it on the record, the information that I'm requesting. That's all.
I got the email. I'm going to ask Amelia to send you a form to fill out, and we'll go from there.
Would you like me to stay to fill it out before I leave? Or?
No, we can email it to you.
Okay.
Whatever, but
then you
got to
print it.
Huh? Whatever's easier for you.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Mike. And so, staff, you have it.
Yeah.
And okay. Perfect.
Got it.
Not seeing or hearing any, we'll move on to item number 4. Staff reports, we'll start with the GM. Tom?
Okay, so I'm going to remove my mask for a couple minutes here. Once again, I apologize for the lateness of this report. We've got a lot of moving things going on around here, and I needed to clean up a couple items before I report it out. Here at the district, we're following the state's increased mandate on wearing masks at all times when in the office and such. And being that, I better put mine back on. And so we're just following the county rules, and now it's a state requirement, so we're following those. We've started talking about reservoir levels, and I want, it's a hot topic around here, so I've asked Michael to address it in his report, and you'll see that that's in his report. I did not have any public records requests since October. I just got the one today. And as we complete the onboarding of our new staff, which I'll talk about in a minute, we'll dive back into the multitude of requests that Ms. Matter made that we weren't able to get to in the past. I'm working, Director Merchant and I and Michael are working with the Sacramento Tree Foundation. They've got a process that we need to go through, applications, forms, and all this stuff, to begin the process of removing the turf from around this building and replace it with trees as part of the Riverview tree mitigation. I think over the years, we're going to see those trees grow. It'll be pretty cool, and we'll save a lot of water. I have nothing new to report on Rancho Murrieta North. On the residents east and north, the residents east and west, that's a typo on my fault, by me. Mr. Sullivan has purchased the residences west property, and he and Mr. Kyle are currently negotiating with the builder to, I'm guessing, maybe purchase the property and then build it, or whatever they're going to do. But if this sale goes through, I'm sure that we'll see a lot of action on the residences east and west beginning in the spring.
There's nothing pending for the district at this point?
No.
Thank you. Okay.
Michael and I are spending some time researching the 670 FSA and any other historical district agreements that relate to those two properties, because they're very complicated, and we want to make sure that up front we know the steps that need to be taken.
I have a
sure
quick question. So Mr. Sullivan has purchased one set of residences, 99 units, right?
Correct.
And Mr. Kyle owns one set of residences.
Correct.
And he's selling his, or they're both selling theirs? Or
right now, and Michael was with, was with me at the meeting, right now they're in negotiation with the builder for the builder to purchase the properties,
okay,
with the intent of building out the neighborhoods.
From them.
Yeah.
From both of them.
Is that accurate, Mike? Yeah, they would purchase both.
They're collecting information, I would say.
Right. The builder's doing their information gathering.
Due diligence.
And trying to see if it's a good decision for them.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it's okay. Just a quick turnaround for Mr. Sullivan. Is that right?
Basically? Yeah, yeah. Especially since he just purchased and.
Right.
For Laguna Joaquin, we're making some real progress. Director Pohl and I have met, and Michael as well, with the RMA a couple times now, and it is my understanding that the RMA is following through with his commitment to find a biologist to come and attend our meeting and talk to us about. Mr. Mabee, Director Mabee?
Yeah, I was at the RMA board meeting last night, and they're moving forward with blue dye, and the agreement was at the RMA board level that it would be a 50-50 revenue split, which conceptually I think we understood that as a board, but I don't remember you or Director Pohl saying that we were moving forward with the blue dye. I thought that was an option, but the understanding I had from the board meeting last night, they are moving forward with the blue dye.
That's news to me. I was not aware of any of these actions until I found out this morning, or just a little bit ago.
At our last meeting, we spoke of a bunch of options. One of them was blue dye. There was probably three or four things that were thrown out. But
So then I would implore you to contact the RMA GM, because my understanding was, because we didn't have a biologist at the last ad hoc committee meeting, options were there, but we were going to get a biologist. All I'm saying is the RMA board moved not to exceed $6,000 in total and move forward with the blue dye as soon as possible. So that would put us for $3,000. Again, I'm not worried about the dollar amount. What concerns me is that was not the update that I received from staff and that I shared with board members. So I would implore you to move forward, and if you would CC their board president and myself, and ask at least to put a little hold on that action until, at least in my mind, I get it clarified, if that makes sense, because that's just not my recollection on what staff updated me on. So I don't know if I'm wrong, but that's...
It surprises me to hear that they would go with just one option without even having us talk to the biologists.
Right. So that's where... But yeah, I digress.
Tim,
all right.
Tim, your recollection is spot on. We've heard nothing about making a decision on the blue dye. The only thing that I was aware of from the last meeting was that the GM at the RMA was going to work to get a biologist to attend the next meeting and to help advise us as we talk about the options. Okay. So I will send Kevin an email and try to get an update on it to make sure we're clear.
Question. Go ahead.
Maybe I heard this wrong, but not so long ago, weren't we working with the same group of people to investigate what our options were?
That is correct. Solitude Lake Management. We've entered into agreements with them to manage our reservoirs and our wastewater ponds.
And they were using the same.
And they were using the same vendor. That's the same vendor that did the bathymetric study. It was my impression, nothing official, but it was my impression that because the principal engineer or scientist that was working with the RMA went on to another company, that Kevin needed to contact Solitude again and try to get somebody on board to come speak with us.
Okay.
When I heard about this issue of them taking to the board to get the $6,000 to pay for something, I thought they were paying for the biologist time. I didn't know that they were paying for anything related to blue dye at this time, because like Martin said, there were a number of options that are still on the table.
So once again, they made the decision.
And so
I don't know that yet.
You have direction, and I'll open it to the other board. I don't want to belabor it, but I think it's pretty clear what we're asking you to do.
I committed to Kevin that we would cover half the cost if there's cost associated
again,
with the biologist,
issue.
But we did not talk about.
I don't want to beat it up. Thank you. Continue on, please.
Okay, and then I just want to reiterate that we have a couple projects that we're putting together. In anticipation that the state or federal government is going to throw out some grant funds, and we want to be in front of this. The main one being the issues with going with the smart water meter system, upgrading our water reading system to be online, and that coincides with our Tyler project, to where we end up with the new web page, we end up with a new way of paying our bills, and people are going to have instant access to their water use. That's the main one that I want to see, because we have a lot of water loss, and once we put this system in place, we're going to be able to track down where we're losing water. It's an aged system, and we've said many a time we're doing a lot of repairs right now, and it kind of ticked up after that earthquake that we had about 4 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't met with any of the village management. I'm not sure if they currently have a manager, but Kelly's trying to reach out with them to have some conversation with the security issues. I'm kind of letting him run point on that right now.
They might have caller ID, so use a different phone, Tom.
Okay.
just a thought. Continue on.
And again, we've met with the RMA quite a bit. I didn't attend the Sac County Groundwater Authority, nor did I attend the Slough House meetings. I believe as the new year turns up, I think those groundwater authorities, GSAs, are going to start getting busy again.
Yeah, they are.
And we have to make sure that our interests are being met when it comes to their ability to bill us for their operations.
Right.
Right now, they're not billing us, but...
Just a point of, for my own edification, we're entering a two-year cycle down at the state legislature. So all bills have to be in place by February 2nd. Why I know this stuff is beyond me. So I guess my point is we probably need to just see if there are some bills out there that are going to impact us. Otherwise, if part of our coalitions need something different, we got to get on a trailer bill or something like that. So I would say probably after the holidays, we hit our group that advocates for us down at the Capitol and see if, because we're on a tight deadline and it is a two-year cycle that we're entering, so that really limits us. But okay, I'm sorry, continue on.
Yeah, CSDA does a good job of monitoring the bills, and the law firm, the Shannon's law firm, they also keep us apprised of certain things that they see coming across the pike.
Very good, thank you.
The other district business, back in October, the board approved some pretty sweeping changes in our personnel environment. They added positions, they changed the compensation for the security, creating an advancement level for patrol and for the gate officers, made some changes that benefit all district employees and in relationship to making working here more attractive so we can have a little bit more retention of staff. In addition to that, we talked about going to what's known as a 980 schedule. What that means is over a period of 9 days, staff work 80 hours between 2 weeks. And so for Monday through Thursday, we have staff work 9 hours a day. And on the first Friday, they work 8 hours. On the next Friday, they're off. So you generate 80 hours over 9 days of work. And this is very common in government. And then what's also common is that we close the office on the alternate Friday for staff development, training, and general workload. So beginning in early January, maybe as early as January 3rd, we're going to activate that schedule. There's some details to work out with the operations folks, with the security folks, but the office in general will be closed every Friday.
Every other Friday.
We'll be closed every Friday. Every other Friday we'll be here, and the alternate ones we won't be here. And I'm sure if somebody wants to have an appointment or someone wants to meet with me about something, I have no problem being opening up the
door.
But the big thing that the public is going to see is we're going to open at 8, we're going to close at 5:30, and we're not going to close during lunch.
Thank you.
So I think that's going to have a nice impact overall, especially not closing during lunch, obviously, but you know, open a little bit later will be helpful.
Just real quickly, Tom.
Yeah.
From an MOU standpoint, do we need to do a side letter with any of the bargaining groups?
I'm currently working with OE3.
Okay.
And getting that side letter out to them. So yes, we do.
Okay, answer my question. Thank you. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tom.
And so the public on a Friday, if they have general things that they need to do, will be directed to go to the South Gate, pretty much like we do on the weekends. If there's an issue, call the South Gate. The South Gate figures out what your issue is. They say, and here's what you got to do, or who are you going to call? You're going to call Mike's team, or maybe the patrol officer will do something.
Got it.
Or maybe they send Paul or myself or Amelia the message.
Okay.
So I think that's a good, it's a real good thing for the district as far as being more service oriented to the public, being open during lunch, being open a little bit later, but also it really gives our staff an opportunity to sit down and go take training for a day when there are not lots of interruptions, as well as getting some work done. Are there any questions about that?
No, I just, from my own point, we talked about this almost a year ago and we're just getting to it, so very good.
Yeah, Paula did a great job in October, and I think this is about the last piece to put in place from her work, and I think it's really made a big difference.
Okay, very good.
And then we continue to recruit for a gate officer and two accounting technicians. And then we're also recruiting two operators for the water plant. Yes, Linda?
Did we miss, or did I miss, upgrading the ABDI, the fire safety grant for Laguna Joaquin? Met with the RMA board?
The upgrade to ABDI, Kelly, are you prepared to talk about that, or you want me to?
You can, yeah.
Okay. The update to the ABDI system is not simple. The vendor has put us off for 2 months waiting for parts. Mm-hmm. So they finally say all the parts are in, and then they're going to come out on Friday or early next week. Right. And he's going to do an assessment of what equipment they need to have available. And what they do is they come in and they install a whole bunch of new hardware. Their first visit, they install a whole bunch of new hardware and then take the old hardware and set it aside while it's still being used. And then a couple weeks after that, they want to come in, and they basically will shut the gates down for a day. Now, they might shut down alternately, or they might you might see the gates at the north gate stop working for 6-8 hours, and then we'll staff up, we'll do the manual entry and all that stuff. But it's a long overdue upgrade. It's been 15 years since the districts did a reasonable upgrade to the ABDI system. So I applaud Kelly with his sticking with it. These guys have been very difficult to work with, but it's because it's a super complicated process of closing gates or, you know, having the staffing,
access.
Doing all the planning for okay. access during those periods of time.
Thank you for bringing that up, Linda.
Thank you very much.
The only thing on that is once we know that, we just have to get notification out to, obviously, RMA, mm-hmm. And then get the information out, and we'll just have a plan of action on how we'll do the manual entry, fast pass, all that.
Okay, we may decide to do a code red notification. We'll certainly ask the county to post something on Nextdoor for us.
Okay.
So as we get closer to this, the visit next week, I don't think is going to result in anything being shut down. But when we do start shutting down the gates, we will advertise it in various locations.
Very good.
Through the Army,
etc.
And then there's a couple things to talk about with training, the SDRMA.
Hold on 1 second, Tom. It was the fire safety grant and general issues in your
list.
Thing right here.
Oh, with the RMA?
Linda
had
two questions there.
Oh, okay. I don't know what's going on with the fire safety grant. Kevin, they've been working on it. They've had meetings.
Right.
We've attended the meetings.
The most current I know on the grant was the same verbiage as the year prior. We're an affluent community that is not at risk. It's the same verbiage as CAL FIRE used last year. So that's all I know on the grant, unless they have another one.
So I just like to mention it because Kelly's attending the meetings, and I want to just kind of pay attention to what they've got going on.
No, very good.
I'm sorry I didn't answer that part of your question, Linda.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead, Tom.
Okay, and getting on to employee announcements, promotions, so on. We are planning, Amelia and Paula are planning a breakfast we're going to serve here next Tuesday for staff. So between Michael, Paula, and I, we'll be doing the cooking. Amelia's going to crack the whip. And we're going to try and cook omelets or breakfast burritos for all the staff at the district. And the board members are welcome to join us. And this is a replacement for the historical lunch that we've had at the country club. We thought it'd be fun to do something a little different and give us a chance to talk to the individual employees.
And I just want to note that Tom and I both have similar career prior paths, but he and I were both short order cooks for many years in previous life. So there will be a little bit of a competitiveness going on. So I do encourage the board members to show up and see who, you know, cooks the best. But you're all very welcome to join us. We would love to have you.
Just
sounds like a challenge.
Sounds like it's good to be the GM, doesn't it?
Hey, by the way, you told me earlier it starts at 6:30 in the morning.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. I just think that everybody should know that.
And we'll do it for a couple hours because that covers the graveyard shift guys mm-hmm. coming off of patrol mm-hmm. or patrol and gate. Also allows the operations workers plenty of time to get here and okay. enjoy the meal.
Mm-hmm. And for the board's edification, we don't play favorites. Okay. Just I want that out there. So continue on, Tom, please.
I already know Paula's going to.
Okay, a reminder, district offices are closed the 24th and the 31st of December. That's because the holiday is actually on the Saturday. And then I want to introduce two new employees we have here with us today. And we'll start with Minaj. Minaj comes from Fiji. He's been in the United States for 12 years. He got his bachelor's degree from DeVry University. He's been in accounting for 9 years. And he plays a handful of musical instruments. He does work with some live bands. And Minaj was with us as a temporary employee for a few months. And when we had the recruitment, he stepped right up and applied, and he was the best candidate. So I want to thank you, Minaj, for
Excellent.
Joining us.
Welcome aboard. Thank you.
Our next employee, and Minaj is the accountant, our accounting manager is Jennifer Yee. And Jennifer's only been here 4 weeks, and she's having a huge impact in helping us find things, i.e. that we're seeing in the financials that we need to clean up before we start making them public again. And before she came here, she worked at a company called ACC Senior Services / Meals on Wheels for Sacramento. So her office was in the Pocket area. She worked for that company for 17 years.
Wow.
She started as an accountant. She graduated from Sac State. And right out of college, she got this job at ACC, pretty much. And then, so 17 later, she joined us. Mm-hmm. So
wow,
very happy. She's really going to have a positive impact, and she already has on the accounting department. So
perfect.
Mm-hmm. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yay.
Welcome aboard.
And that's it for my report.
Okay. Any board members, any questions of the GM? Thank you, Tom. Moving on to 4B. Administration financial reports.
Thank you. So just a couple of things to start off with. The monthly budget to actuals we didn't include this month. We had run into a couple of glitches in the Great Plains system, and our project manager that we deal with fairly regularly was out on vacation for 2 weeks for the month of Thanksgiving and the week after. And so, you know, due to the timing issue, not being able to reach her to help her assist us with making some of these corrections, we weren't able to provide the monthly budget to actuals, but we do plan on having those present for the January meeting again. She is currently working on creating a couple of report corrections for us as well. So we have some things that that will be corrected for next month, and we should have all of our entries complete and done accurately. Did you want to say something?
I just wanted to remind everyone, we have about 6 different systems we use to do our finances that mm-hmm. are going to be replaced by Tyler Encode when it goes live. But we need to manage those other systems to get to that point where we do a go live. So we'll continue to have to focus on making the stuff work. So.
Yeah, and a lot of the work that we're doing along with our monthly reporting is a lot of cleanup as well, knowing that we're moving into that implementation within the next few months. So it's brought a lot of additional things to the forefront that we normally wouldn't have encountered if we were just providing regular monthly budget to actuals reports. So, but we do expect to have that corrected and presented for January. We will be talking about the Tyler Technologies. Other things to note with the reserve funds, we are working to have that prepared for January as well. We're working on the usage as well as the reserve contributions and making sure that we have all of our entries booked correctly. We're going to be closing out 1920 fiscal year with Great Plains within the next week or so. And so we'll have those beginning balances for 2021 fiscal year. So we'll have a better idea of where we're at for this current fiscal year as far as our reserve balances go. We're also working with Mike and his team in operations as well to go through the reserve study and get that squared away. So we'll have more financial and improvements updates in the next month. Utility billing, very quickly, we still have a significant amount of past due balances. Right now, I think it's been the highest it's been in the last 8 months, and it's at $157,000 and some change, and $13,000 493 of that is past due balances. We are going through and cleaning up a lot of off-billing accounts, off-credit accounts. What that means is when people move out, we owe them credits or they owe us additional funding. And so we're working to get those cleaned up as well within the next couple of months. So I think a lot of that aging is part of, not a lot, but a significant portion of that is the past due plus the off-billing accounts that still owe us money. And then I think that's it for my report. Any questions?
Board, any questions? Tom, I know you and I have talked about this. We've done it in the past. I think we started last year having a mid-year budget review. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that would work, say, a February-ish,
mm-hmm.
Yes. To me would probably, so I'm thinking that, and so I'll kick it to the finance committee folks. I would rather us get it right. So if we need the extra time in January and get it right for the mid-year budget review, that would be my preference instead of saying you're going to get me something in January, mm-hmm. and we're just not there. I don't want an artificial deadline, but I'll kick it to board members. I'd rather give staff that extra month to not put a deadline, knowing that we are going to do our mid-year fiscal review, and that'll be kind of our catch-up period, if that makes sense. And so, like I said, if you guys are fine with that, I'll ask the rest of the board, but that would be my preference, give you extra time, and then knowing whether we have a special board meeting in February on the mid-year review, or, you know, it's the agendized item, if you will, for the board meeting. But that's kind of my preference. So if I don't hear anything otherwise, don't worry about January. I need it for the mid. Mm-hmm. I need it for the mid-year review, and then we'll work back through what does that look like when in February, and obviously you got to work with the finance committee and that standpoint. So, okay, thank you. Sorry.
Great, thank you. We appreciate that.
Thank you, Paula. One thing of note, and this is to you, Mr. Hart. Amelia did give me your message. I apologize. I just have some personal stuff going on, and I've got a backlog of phone calls, and you're one of them. I wasn't ignoring you, and yes, Amelia did give me your message, but I apologize for not being professional getting back to you, so I'm sorry for that. Item 4C, Kelly.
Thank you. CSD has hired one new gate officer. He started today. He's our very own. We continue to work with ABA for our staffing shortages. As far as patrol not covered shifts, we increased only 4 hours since last month, and that was due to unexpected sick time. Tom's already briefed you about the ABDI software. Good news, we were able to purchase a new security vehicle. It's a Toyota truck. I parked it right outside, so if after the meeting any board members or any members of the public...
Is that what I just threw the door ding in? Door ding.
That's it right there. It's ready to go. It still needs a little bit more equipment to make it patrol ready. We should have it up and running maybe
is
the first.
Is it gray?
Is it gray?
Yeah.
It's white?
Oh, it's white. Okay.
It's the white
that's
one.
Right.
I parked it right here to the left.
I just wondered who I parked next to.
Right. So that's, I have the keys. If anybody would like to see it after the meeting, we'd be happy to show it to everybody.
Can I drive it?
You can drive it.
Okay.
You can drive it. Yeah. In the mud, right?
We'll pull you up.
So we're excited to have that, add that to our fleet. Another good purchase that Tom has allowed, and which should make our job a lot easier, is a purchase of a LIDAR gun. And this LIDAR gun, we have one that we use during the day, which we were able to, obtain our speeding violations. So it's used during the day.
Scratch that from the record.
I said I didn't want to say trap.
Can we redact that?
This LIDAR gun at night would be able to track our speed violators at night, and that is our biggest complaint. So upon purchasing this device, we will be able to do speed enforcement at night. And that leads us to the next. If you've noticed on our patrol, violation summary. We had 37 citations last month in speeding, and RMA was very excited about that because that is our biggest complaint is speeding violations. So we're limited now. It gets dark about 4 o'clock, 4:30. So now with this new device, we'll be able to go all night long with speeding violations. So we're very happy to have that, and that should be a winner.
When will we have it, or do you have it?
No, I'm in the process of ordering it now and doing the PO and looking for the shopping. I think RMA was going to get one, but it got, at the last minute, it was not allowed for some reasons. So I have the same specifications from that Chris from RMA was going to order, so okay. I just took his information and going forward with that as well. So excited to have that. We know the gate traffic is down overall. As far as the top issue being denied for gates, it's construction vendor. This just shows the shift to go that we're enforcing the rules. So we see vendors denied a little bit higher this time because we're enforcing the rules of Monday through Friday. They can't start until 7 and on the weekends at 8 o'clock. So that's why we see that little uptick with denied. Security, myself, Tom, we had a direct meeting with all the RMA staff, which was Kevin and his two compliance officers. And we met and discussed several subjects. One of the subjects, the first subject we discussed was writing citations in the back area along areas they don't have jurisdictions. We talked about that quite in depth. We talked about the revised non-ARC rules. We talked about the citation requirements, the issues that they want on their citations to make them where they can go through and be presented with the violations attacked. They gave us some improvement ideas on what we could put in our citations. And the big thing they talked about was synergy between RMA staff and CSD. I have weekly conversation with almost everybody at the RMA side, so we do have that open communication. And Kevin wanted to make sure we had that. I did attend the Fire Safety Council meeting. I have Director Merchant was a special guest, so they noted that for the record. They continue to focus on the same themes as the prior meeting. They talked about the Calgore fire being a success as far as mass notifications, and there's no casualties, and to the evacuation of the fire, and they want to have a system like that placed in here as well. They're looking for databases of our citizens that may need to special needs to evacuate, to continue to look for a database or of some sort so they can be notified of their special needs of evacuation. They highlighted that. They highlighted that they want to work with the State Fire Marshal in partnership for wildfire prevention. They also talked about home hardening and working with the insurance industry, plants that aren't as a little more fire resistant, don't take as much water. They talked about that as well. There's no questions about the charts. I'll go on to the incidents of note between November 1st and November 30th. On November 2nd, 2021, there was a theft of a motor vehicle at Bel Air. CSD security were informed that a Bel Air employee, Kawasaki Mule, M-U-L-E, was stolen. Security reviewed video footage from Bel Air, the Village cameras, and the OE3 camera systems, and observed the suspect's location was heading through open property along the airport towards the county bridge. Later that evening, the CSP recovered that vehicle in a ditch by Jackson Highway. The suspects were eventually arrested 3 days later by Amador County Sheriff for the grand theft auto of that vehicle. This once again shows how we kind of filled in the void by looking at our camera system and were able to assist law enforcement with their
excellent.
That arrest.
Thank you, Kelly.
So that was a win-win for us. On November 5th, 2021, there was a grand theft at the retreats. The security responded to a grand theft of an iPad and iPhone on the retreats trail. These items were left outside the patio area, unsecured. The victim refused to report the incident to the Sheriff's Department and refused to have contact with our staff going on scene and doing an investigation. However, that's important because we've already had, last month we had the theft, the burglary. This is another one of a property in the retreats, and I'm about ready to go into the third one. On November between the 12th and 27th, there was a burglary at the retreats trail. The victims were away on vacation. Upon their return, they discovered that unknown suspects forced entry into the back window. The suspects entered the location and ransacked various rooms. However, no property was taken. The suspect fled the scene. Sheriff's Department responded and completed a burglary investigation. There were no witnesses, video cameras, or additional witnesses recovered. We've been directing extra patrol of our nighttime patrol officers to hit that area very hard. and report anything suspicious. So going back to November 5th, again, we were disappointed that the victim would not, just wanted us to know about it, but refused to report to the Sheriff's Department and didn't want to let us come out there and do an investigation. So we've been giving extra patrol to the retreats, and there's been no incidences since November 27th.
Do we have any general, you know, sense of why the retreats? Is there maybe somebody who knows about that group of houses? Maybe it's an easy hit?
Well, I think from what patrol tells me is that there's no camera system. None of these people had camera systems in their own. And then the back end, it faces towards the golf course, and I go that open road. They're just speculating that's maybe why that there's no a lot of visibility back there. And I know the victim from last month, he's been very vocal. He's been on social media, and he's been putting theories out there that we have to really crack down the gates because someone may have come in and done this. And we just don't know. It could be kids. It could be someone already here. Mm-hmm. And it's just unclear yet. However, if you recall, I did mention they have a handprint from that first burglary. And that handprint may be able to connect these all together. And we have to really work with the Sheriff's Department to give us that information. So hopefully they'll have some closure with that because there was a handprint left on that first burglary. Okay.
Thank you.
So, very good.
Thank you.
I have a couple of things. RMA is moving forward with a mandatory golf cart identification process. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I wasn't even looking up. I apologize. Go ahead, Mr. Gear.
I just walked up to you. I was wondering where the money's coming from to pay for the LIDAR system.
It's going to come out of the security budget.
It's coming out of the security budget.
Yeah. Now, that's used solely for enforcing RMA's CCNRs. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes.
Is that appropriate? It seems like a gift of public funds to RMA.
That's the discretion on how we spend those monies and how we best apply them. And we have the ability to spend those funds on those types of
things. Solely for the benefit of RMA?
Well, let me clarify. The majority of the traffic enforcement we do has the CCNRs with RMA.
Right.
Should the Mobile Village, should the Homeowners Association for the new homes want to enter into some type of agreement process for us to do that type of enforcement, again, very limited.
Correct.
But we can work through the other associations. Don't have a problem with that whatsoever. The thought process behind this is not only are we going to use it, but RMA staff is going to use it as well. Now, at the end of the day, is a majority of it going to be used in the RMA? The answer is yes. Is it a gift of public funds? The answer is no. The discretion comes back to the board on where we use it. Ideally, and you've heard from the general manager, we're on month three that there's been no contact, and we'll pick on the Mobile Village with any staff or anything there. So again, I would implore you to go back to that association and say, hey, can we work out something? Because, and I won't speak for the rest of the board, but I would like to be able to tell the GM to direct the security supervisor, here's the agreement, let's start doing the same process we do at RMA. However you folks adjudicate it, I think we could build that into our available capacity in our system. So that's where it's at. That's all I have to say.
Can I ask who pays for the enforcement of RMA's CCNRs?
The RMA gives the district a small amount of money as part of our role with enforcing their CCNRs. And like Tim said, if the village would like us to enforce their CCNRs, you know, we're open to it. This is why I've asked Kelly to try to meet with whomever is in charge over there at the village. We're having the same discussion with the 78 homes, the Murrieta Gardens 2 and the Murrieta Gardens commercial. In the meantime, as you're aware, the village, people who live in the village and live in the Murrieta Gardens 2, they pay I think it's around $7.56 a month for towards security, and the people who live behind the gates pay $30.32 a month.
Right.
And so the difference there is for the gate, not for the enforcement.
The difference is the gates. But as a security department, we have to use discretion on how we spend our funds, and then we apply our work as we do. So if the we felt it was necessary to be able to do enforcement in the evening at the, with behind the gates, and if the village wants to come to us and ask us to do enforcement of their CCNRs, it's been on the table before, and we haven't, as far as I know, we haven't been asked to enforce anything. We patrol it. We drive through there on a regular basis. But we're not asked to enforce anything. Occasionally, we answer. We have a call out there for certain activities.
I don't think there's any interest of having you enforce villages' CCNRs. But you know, enforcing CCNRs for RMA—that's for their private benefit. Is that not correct?
Yeah, and that's why they pay more.
No, that's not why they pay more. They pay more for the gate.
That's not true.
I think you ought to talk to Mr. Shanahan about that.
Well, I tell you what, here, I understand what you said. It's our prerogative how we spend the money that's allocated to the district. Right now, I'm sorry?
I said I'll disagree.
Which is fine.
You can't do anything you want. You can't give it to me.
Well, you haven't asked for any, so we'll leave it at that. You've heard our offer to your association that you belong to, where you live. What I will tell you is direction's been given to the general manager. You heard the process is in place. It's going to stay in place. We are not going to waste staff's time or legal counsel's time to see if it's okay, because it is appropriate spending of the funds, and we're moving forward with it. We're just reporting out as we do with numerous other items on a regular basis. We can agree to disagree, and that might be where we leave it.
Well, thank you for your response. I find it totally inappropriate, though.
That's fine.
I mean, not your response, but
right. No, I understand.
Money for enforcement of RMA CCNRs.
Understand. No, I understand. No worries.
Kim. Kelly, yes. In ballpark, how much is this radar going to cost?
$5,000.
Thank you.
Going back to last night, the RMA staff reported out that it'll be a mandatory requirement that all golf carts have a RMA decal tag on the rear of all golf carts. It's supposed to take effect in January. There's been minor dialogue with RMA. I tried to explain roughly 2010 or 9, somewhere in there, CSD used to give out decals. RMA asked everything go to a barcode. RMA is going away from the barcode. I thought there was a chance to have some further dialogue with it, but it appears they're moving forward with it. I don't support it for numerous reasons, but at the end of the day, that's where they're moving. So just FYI, how they're going to enforce, et cetera, what that workload then comes to us, I don't know, there it is.
Tim, is there any part of that discussion, like whatever they decide they want to use, that these guys would have some input? Would it be something, number one, that they could readily see?
Well,
someone if they went by and someone on the sidewalk, you know, nearly gets run over, they might have a chance of identifying the vehicle, or
that is the conceptual process. But if you look at what is a golf cart here in Marietta, everything from the four row seater to the razors to all those things,
gasoline engines.
Yeah, you know, just it physically. I don't know how it's going to work. They want it, so their compliance officer can see a golf cart, and it's number 1, 2, 3, and then they're going to go through that process of how they do it. Again, the difficulty is we've had discussion here at the board level, and subsequent, I know the board members have had discussion with RMA board members. An example I'll use is the Upper Lake. At some point, we just put a barcode system there, and it either tracks people coming and going, or it operates during these hours, and that's how you get in. Otherwise, you've got to now trespass, et cetera, et cetera. This would do nothing to get us to that enhanced state. So with that, what I'll do is I'll ask the general manager, unless I hear something otherwise, since you're pen pals right now anyways, if you would put this as another item to ask them to at least not initiate it next month and have some discussion, because it's a bigger issue to me than just putting ID on the back of a golf cart. Right. It's the barcode system, access into the community, and staff has had those discussions. We're going to have more of those discussions. To me, the barcode at the end of the day is a better security issue, if you will, than making a mandatory. And again, I don't know what mandatory means. But
is there a handheld device that can read the barcode?
And I've asked Kelly to look into that, and that's going to be probably purchased if I have funds left over in security probably this year, but it's going to be an item I know for the next fiscal year I'm going to put in just for that, so that the compliance side of the house at RMA has one, we have one, so when you come up to a vehicle around the lakes or someplace, you can just shoot it. It gives you the information, and we move on. That's all been shared with the prior RMA board president on where I think we need to get to. So they have a new RMA board president. So I'm going to push it from that direction. So.
Jim, can I ask a question?
No, you can't. No.
So there's going to be, when you go by the back lakes, there's going to be a barcode?
No, the thought process, Mike, is conceptually in my mind, I would like to have a gate there. It opens automatically at this time of day. The barcode then can read truly how many people go in there. And then whenever park hours are, it closes. And now if you're going to be back there after hours, you now have to want to get back there and trespass, other than just the traffic that we have going right now.
So that whole area is a park area? Because I thought it was going to be streets and another. And I thought the original RMA agreement says every unit has to have access to every unit in the big master plan. And one unit cannot be locked out of another unit. And the only place that we have curfews are is parks. So I know where the parks are back there, but it sounds like that we're encompassing a whole lot of developed land or open land that is now not access to the community because we're putting a time frame on this stuff.
No, I understand exactly what you're saying. I can't. I told you where I'm at out here.
Okay.
Just like Clementia. Ideally, if for those park hours, just like Stonehouse, we lock gates, do those things. If we could automate it, and really what we have today is the barcode.
I understand the park. I understand the park stuff.
Yeah, and so that's conceptually where I'm trying to get to. Understand, we have a facility back there, and hence we have lakes back there. To me, I can't tell you. Well, we've had one resident, he since moved, said there's probably 1,000 people a day in vehicles, you know, go back there. I don't think that's practical or possible, but not having something to measure or those things, to me the barcode's kind of that short-term answer. Now, I haven't seen the development plans. I don't know if the entry to the Upper Lakes is going to be a paved street and it addresses those issues. Then we move on to the next one. But conceptually, that's where I'm at, Mike, if it makes sense.
And we're not there. There's no development back there yet.
Yeah, I don't.
And we don't know when there's going to be development.
I'll give you an example. We just had open space on the south for 25 years, and everybody accessed the river and some other areas back there, and nobody cared about that piece of land. We didn't gate that area off, and there's a lot of complaints going by number 11, number 10 to get back to the river access.
Right.
And
mm-hmm. Right.
We talked about Bermuda Court.
Right.
Which is different than a park. So I
Correct.
Understand the hours of the parks, but now we're blocking. Now I understand, and I heard you talk about it a little bit before in a prior conversation about blocking the lakes out and not making access to anybody. But there's easements. There's a long time easements between every single landowner in this community.
Correct.
Because we had a big argument with Wilbur Hayes a long time, and actually him and I agreed that we were going to handcuff each other to the gate. And Sullivan wanted to keep everybody off his land.
Right.
At one time, and that was not legally allowed.
What was unclear, though, Mike, was what, and that got down, drilled down to the level of pedestrian or vehicle as well, which mm-hmm. they never resolved.
I understand the car stuff.
Yeah,
I get the car
yeah.
stuff.
But you're right on the pedestrian access.
So I mean, if I have a bicycle, I can get through. But
yeah,
if I have a golf
yeah,
cart,
and
I can't.
You know, even when they were going on about locking it all down, there really wasn't any consideration for the fact that people couldn't walk back there or ride a bike. It was more to stop the cars.
And just for clarification, we've talked about a lot of things. In the perfect world, we need to be very careful about our water supply and our water quality. And the number of things that go on back there that could be problematic, porta potties in the Calero. It's a long list and long enough.
So now would just the hours make the. If you got those concerns about the water quality, water treatment, most things happen in the daytime here.
No.
Not nighttime. Well, no. I've been here a long time, and I tell you, there's a lot of people that walk that lakes and take their dogs in that lake and fish in those lakes.
I know. There. I agree with you. I'm just saying that we've had major incidences, not during the day, at night. Somebody dragged a porta potty into Lake Calero. We've had at night a person in a truck run over a fire hydrant. We've had somebody jump out of a hot air balloon into Lake Calero.
And that gets back to my issue about security. And I've said this professionally and correctly: the piece of land that's been vandalized and robbed the most is the country club. I mean, if you look at the statistics, that parcel of land has had more vandalism, more robberies than any other parcel in the whole district. And you know, and one of the complaints and one of the conversations I had is how do you, and we get no compliance. You can't find a citation that's ever been cited on the country club property other than by the pro shop or that kind of stuff there. So when you start talking about security, I knew a little bit about this stuff. When I hear you're gonna take steps to block access for a couple people's properties versus the whole community, and it's eventually gonna be a street, I think you need to take a look at some of the easements that have been given to those properties back there and what John Sullivan's responsibility is to the rest of the community.
I do not disagree, Mike. I know we're not going to get it solved here.
And I didn't understand about the bar. That's what you caught me off guard when you talked about putting the barcode there. I understand your concern about the golf cart sticker.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. The country club uses their sticker. So when they cite somebody,
right.
They have a list of who that is. If
right,
you find
right.
that.
Right.
Yeah. And I agree with you that I think the barcode would be a better system to ride the golf cart on the street because they're doing just as much other stuff.
Right.
Yes.
You know, that kind of stuff. But I get that, but you caught me off guard a little bit. That we're gonna
well, and another example is, and I won't belabor it, but, and I've had some conversation at just the rudimentary level with, the golf course staff of you put a barcode on the yellow bridge and the barcode obviously has access for that. That would eliminate so much trespassing on the golf course of people that aren't golf course members. So those are the conceptual things that I'm trying to kind of wrap my head around, but at the end of the day, having an ID on the back of a golf cart doesn't help
I understand that.
And that's where I'm at.
And I got to tell you, I've talked to Tom, the cameras that you're putting in are going to really help solve crimes after the after the fact.
Right.
It was never meant to solve crimes before.
Right, we just don't have the ability. All right, thank you, Mike. I'm sorry.
One more question, though. Is this barcode deal going to bypass the conversations that we've started to have on replacing the barcodes in general with either signal or chip access?
The system, the upgraded system to barcodes uses something known as an RFID.
Yeah, and my question is, you know, are we going to go through this whole rigmarole of outfitting golf carts only to get it finished in time to redo it again?
Well, we have no involvement in the project Kevin is talking about. We offered some input as to what we would prefer, and we've received no response back. My request was, he wants to have a number that's about this big on his little tags so they can be seen from a distance. And my request was, can we buy a barcode with a big number on it? I guess the response is no. They're going to go with their, I think it's shaped like a football, right?
I know Ted's got stuff to say here as well. Every time we adapt to something, and I'm not saying that there's not technology that doesn't improve our performance and perhaps lower our cost, but every time we adapt to one of these retrofits to the entire system, it's essentially costing us money to do that. And we're not paid off a menu. We're paid, basically off a tax, and then we bill back, and it is a modest amount of money that comes back from the RMA when you look at the total allocation of time that is spent on the RMA versus everything else. So, the cost accounting on this is whacked, and it's been whacked forever. And so every time we adapt to something or we're asked to do something additional, there ought to be a cost.
We're doing nothing with these tags. I mean, I'm guessing he's expecting us to be able to read the numbers when we see them roll through stop signs and stuff.
One of his issues was that they can't gather all the golf carts at one time, and they need manpower to help implement the program. They can't all come to the south gate at once. So he was proposing we would maybe go to the RMA parking lot a couple of days and spread it out when the mandatory notices went out. So he was looking for our help in that way as well.
Yeah, I've got nothing in writing. All I have so far from Kevin is the conversation.
And the other part of that is, isn't there, and Tim referenced the, and I think it's a great idea, that at least the club has an identification system. But isn't there just one conversation that maybe integrates it all into one entity or standardizes it to one barcode or one radio signal or something? And something behind ABDI, and hopefully someday they go away and is replaced by somebody that can really do something, that maybe we can't interpret those signals and read them, and accommodate various entities so that we get some standardization. I mean, just because you have a golf cart, it seems to me pretty simple if you're emitting the same signal with technology to start to be able to understand whether it belongs to the golf club or it belongs on a private street to a resident that doesn't belong to a country club. So there's, it never starts with a big picture. It always, it starts at the bottom level, and then morphs into something else. And we've been doing it for years. Tim says, well, we were doing this in 2009, and now we're doing it again. We're trying to still do it the first time. It just doesn't, it's part of this whole retrofit that we're trying to do as it relates to the tax, and Mike's right that they're getting no enforcement for an exorbitant charge, and we can't adjust the charges unless we adjust the tax. So if we do a part job on the tax, I've asked this question before: how do we treat the commercial entity and how do we treat the country club? Because the formulas can't change. They're embedded in the law. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I just don't.
Well, I'll report back on my communications with the RMA GM on this issue and the other one.
Okay. And I understand what you're saying, John.
Yeah.
You're right. There's some big picture issues. So with that, Kelly, does that conclude your report?
It does.
Thank you. Sorry I took everybody's time. 4D, Michael, please.
All right, thank you. We are moving forward with the SB 170 funded projects. Those are important projects to us. Moving on to the water treatment facility, we did do some extended maintenance to the filter in Plant 2. I think next year we're going to have to do a little bit more maintenance with the filter under drain system. It's unfortunately that the filter under drain system is obsolete, so we're going to have to, we do have a plan about what kind of repairs we can do to keep that filter running.
Okay.
I mean, ultimately, we're probably just going to build capacity with additional membranes.
And that'll be worked through the improvements committee, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Our membranes have been requiring some extensive repairs. Part of the problem is, I think, that we're getting towards the end of the useful life of the membranes. We're also having some UV curing issues with the repairs, and that's been brought on because of potassium permanganate staining, which we put in to remove manganese. And I think we've come up with a solution that we're just going to increase the cleaning. I guess a number of years back, we had pulled back the cleaning process because there was an expense to it. With the recommendation from GE, we've increased the cleaning, and we're getting better results. So,
what's the life on those, Mike?
I think they're 7 to 10 years.
Okay, they went in 2014.
Yeah, so we're there.
Okay.
So we will, but I mean, it's not an issue now, but we probably need to start looking at next fiscal year, potentially.
So I would just make notes. We're doing the reserve study, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
I need an asterisk next to that. Thank you. Continue on.
All right, back to the wastewater treatment facility. I want to give you an update on the Platt water pumps that we had purchased, I think, back in June, and then had severe rust exfoliation issues come September. We're working with the manufacturer. The manufacturer is taking one of the pumps and having the volute sandblasted and recoated with a new coating. We're going to put this to test during the recycled water season. If that works, the manufacturer will recoat the second pump. So they're making good on their...
Thank you.
With the big one for the water distribution system, you saw the memo on the 8-inch valve that we need to replace. It's possible that the packing material around the stem or the bonnet seal has failed. On Thanksgiving, I got a call that we had water going down the street and into the storm drain, and we couldn't figure out why. We found out it was a 8-inch valve that completes a loop, so we were able to close the valve, and there's still some water leaking, but not like there was before. The concern is transporting fines out of the subsurface area and creating a sinkhole, so you saw that memo.
Right.
With the wastewater collection system, I had met with staff and I had asked staff, tell me where the weak points are in our collection system, and you'll be getting a memo and improvements about 4 lift stations that have been identified in that. The district is currently abstaining from pumping water right now. We did have 2 pumps on until yesterday. Our turbidities came up to about 70 NTU, and this morning they were 110 NTU. And I'll pass the little snow globe around.
Right.
Pass that down. So we're monitoring the turbidity. When it comes back down, we'll turn the pumps back on. It's standard practice.
You want a little in your glass?
I was going to say, can you talk me off?
Yeah, don't drink that.
Michael, when we get a big rain, and that, I don't remember what day it was that it rained all day, maybe Sunday. We don't turn the pumps on as soon as the water starts flowing at the rate that it's supposed to in order to turn the pumps on. Don't we have to wait until the water sort of settles down and the mud and debris?
Well, what we do is we sample, and we use turbidity as a measuring stick. And so if we get a turbidity under about 7, we just go ahead and start pumping, as long as we have sufficient CFS in the river. One additional step we do now is we make sure we get on the website to make sure that we haven't been curtailed. That's just a new requirement. Have not been curtailed by the state.
Somebody hasn't said.
Yeah, we don't think we would, but that's a requirement. That's one additional step that we take. So we do test the turbidity, and we keep an eye on it, and the minute we can pump again, we will.
And to be here clear, turbidity is the water clarity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
To be clear.
To be clear.
No, it was nicely done, I know.
So to speak.
Right.
As of November 30th, total water stored between Clementia, Chesbrough, and Calero totaled 8,532 acre feet, about 1.7% more than last year at this time. We also had a 218% increase over the same level last year for our stored wastewater that we can utilize to make recycled water next year. Also note that Clementia, you can see in the graph, and I think it's figure 3, Clementia came right up after that October rain. We were utilizing it for some agricultural and for the south course, I believe. And,
right.
And the rain brought it right back up, which just shows you how important the watershed is to Clementia. I reran the gallons per day per capita. We had an update from the census. They're saying that it's now 2.8 persons per residence versus the 2.099 as previous to 2020. That puts forecasts us to come in at about 152 gallons per day per capita, well under our goals that we had set. I'm going to continue to take a look at how we're calculating this, where these numbers are coming from. Take a look at commercial, separate that out. There's seven different ways you can do it.
Their number, it's their number. It's the census.
Yeah. You don't buy the 2.8.
I'm not buying 2.8. No way. But 2.5 maybe, 2.4. I mean, we were at 2.1.
Yeah, 2.099. Yeah, 2.1. Yeah.
I mean, when you look at the splits in the 0 to 5 category and the 5 to 17 category. And the impact that has on household occupied, and you divide the number of connections by the entire population, it just doesn't come up to 2.8.
What are you getting?
To about 2.4, 2.5, maybe.
I wonder where they're getting the numbers.
I don't. It's the census.
Yeah, I mean we can run those as well. We can run those as well.
Yeah, we could. I mean, if it really became an issue where it was impacting some kind of analysis we did with water supply or integrated water or something, maybe you would want to test it. But, you know, if you're using it, be careful because it probably isn't right.
Yeah, and then we're going to bring this up with the improvements as well as far as doing a kind of an update on the water master plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's see. As of November 30th, potable water production totaled 1,666 acre feet, about 23.8 acre feet higher than last year. Development water use accounts for about 56% of that increased production from 2020, and the June hydrant leak accounts for about 36% of that increased production from last year. For field utility service, the utility field crew responded to 37 utility star work orders in November, 9811 USA locates, 5 homeowner calls, 4 water leaks were repaired. The utility crew began focusing on sewer cleaning, keeping storm drains clear, and jetted about almost 14,000 feet of sewer main line. In addition, 300 feet of sewer main line was video inspected. A total of 11 problem area manholes have inspected for root intrusion and cleaned as needed. For development, retreats work has continued with storm sewer lines being installed along what will become Via Robria Way off of Delar Cruz. Riverview water and sewer line installation has been completed for phase 1A along Reynosa Drive. Drainage infrastructure has been installed from Reynosa Drive to Bird Loop. Marietta Gardens, minor civil work has occurred on lot 11, and staff have worked with the developer to ensure adequate wet weather BMPs are in place, as well as with the airport. And I think the airport's finishing up their construction. I put together a construction observation group, including Peter Regan, a resident of Rancho Marietta. He's an experienced field inspector, and he's joined the district construction management team as a retired contract employee. We also have our retired and new intent, Andres Lozano, and we have Ron Greenfield, and they're my on-the-ground team. So I work with Joe Dominicelli to make sure that what they're putting in the ground is put in the ground properly, so we inherit something that's functional for our sewer and water infrastructure, drainage infrastructure. And tomorrow, I'll be interviewing three candidates for operating training and for three candidates for a certified operator position. And hopefully, we have some fruitful interviews tomorrow. So is there any questions?
Michael, I want to add to that the camera issue, if you don't mind. You'll see that if you go to Chesboro today, that by the boat ramp, there's a solar panel on a pole. And probably by now, I think there's three cameras there. That's the RMA project. The RMA is also putting a similar array of a solar power panel and cameras at the sign there, the marquee sign at the top of Calero. And then you will soon see an array of cameras at what is the siphon pumping station, which is that little outlet there at Calero. That's our equipment. You will also, in the near future, see us starting to put cameras in at our lift stations. We want to make sure that we're protecting our assets, and if somebody wants to cause some trouble with our assets, we want to know who it was.
Right.
We also, we've had a great amount of success with the cameras we put in front of the village. I think Kelly tells me weekly how we contribute to an arrest or running somebody down. Interestingly enough, the power was shut off.
Not
to those
technically running somebody down.
It's a law enforcement term.
Sure.
It's not a fire department term. It's a law enforcement term.
Okay. Sorry.
So you know we're doing a better job, and we're focusing on protecting our assets. If we're unable to close access or limit access, we can at least go back and review who did what and when, and then we can take something from there. I think that the camera program is immeasurable as far as the force multiplier that it right. provides the district security.
And I know, I think Mike, Mr. Martel alluded, I know you've had conversations where we're going with the country club, how we're doing it and all that, so thank you. My own edification, Tom, the camera that's going on the rickety old bridge, just is the wiring going all the way across, or is it just wiring to the center post or to the center?
I saw yesterday they have a few days ago, they have a camera bubble right there in the center.
Okay, so let me be specific again. The request was made to have that conduit run to the far end of the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And your observation, was that done?
No, I didn't see conduit going to the end of the bridge. I saw it terminate at the little camera bubble.
So because we're pen pals, would you add that on?
Yeah.
That either confirming the request was done and they ran the conduit and we just don't see it. If they didn't, may we have access to that conduit to run it to the far end of the bridge, please?
Okay.
Thank you. Mike, what else?
Oh, that's it, unless there's any questions.
Board, any questions?
No.
I like the reporting, the graphs, all that stuff. So as we move through this, and again, it kind of goes back to the improvement committee. If it's meeting their needs, I can understand this. So we've got to the minimal level here.
Good.
So I like where we're at. So
great.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Item number five, Amelia, I'll kick this to you. Basically, it's the district meeting dates for not only the regular board meeting, but then the committee meetings. So we just need to confirm with staff if we can make it or if we need to have modifications. So I'll leave it at that. Item number six, correspondence. I didn't see any unless I missed it. No correspondence.
Oh, yes. It came in late. Was a resident was concerned about their water bill and how it was calculated.
It's been going on a long time.
Pardon me?
The way I read it, it's been going on a long time.
It's been ongoing for a few months. And oddly enough, when our water meter vendor changed, they retired, and then our operation got supported by a new company, and this new company shipped us meters that they hadn't reprogrammed, they hadn't reprogrammed some of them. It's really weird. So we keep running across meters that were installed in the past few months that need to be reprogrammed, and this particular resident was a victim of a meter that provided crazy readings. Mm-hmm. So I spoke with her twice this week, and we've figured it out. I think she's happy. We're going to issue, we're going to make an adjustment to her account, and then we'll become square, and then there should be no issues after that.
Is refresh my memory, is this the resident you and I had conversation on?
This is the one who sent the email to Sue Frost and all the board members.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay, so we had a conversation. Okay. If you think it's isolated, and I'll throw this to the board, if you think it's isolated, then fine. If it's not isolated, then I would think we need to do some type of notification out to the community saying, we spotted this trend, we've addressed it, here's what we know of it, and at least get it out there, if that makes sense.
We determined how to isolate the individual meters. So we requested a report from our utility billing mm-hmm. provider. When we get that report, we'll do some sorts, we'll figure out what the potential number is. It's small. It's just a handful of meters that were replaced in the months of March, April, and May, pretty much.
You answered my question. Okay. Thank you. We covered item number seven already. Item number eight, consider approval, updated credit card policy. Tom, that'll be you.
That'll be Paula.
Paula.
That'll be me. Thank you. So basically, just in reviewing a lot of our policies and procedures, this one was significantly outdated and kind of killing two birds with one stone, incorporating U.S. Bank's policies regarding the usage and prohibition of usage with their CalCard, and updating the language and incorporating that in the credit card policy. So this is really just updating it so we can provide the staff that
it's
do
what
hold.
We or I know is the CalCard.
Correct. It's a CalCard program, and just need to update that so we can have staff updated on the terms and conditions of usage. And so that's pretty much the gist of it.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to make a motion to accept the policy 2021-04. If I have a second, please.
I'll second that.
Thank you,
Director Merchant. Roll call vote. Director Mabee.
Aye.
Director Janko.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Merchant.
Yes.
Director Pohl.
Yes.
I figured Mark would be for it since he's that, financial, tightwad.
No more buying ammo with the car.
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
And mm-hmm. It's just
duck shot. Yep. Come on.
Item number nine, consider approval contract with Tyler, whoever he is, Tyler Technologies for Enterprise Resource Planning, which is your basic ERP, appropriate funds in the amount of $97,426. We're going to stay with you, Paula.
Yes, absolutely. So what we are bringing forward today is the actual contract with Tyler Technologies. This is for their product Encode. It's an enterprise resource planning, or ERP, system. And this is going to replace several of our standalone systems that we're currently using for payroll, procurement, AP. We have General Ledger and Great Plains, and then we also have our utility billing software. All of these systems are standalone, and this is part of the reason why we have significant reporting issues with Great Plains, is the connectivity between all of those systems just isn't there, and so it requires a lot of manual effort for staff to update the system to get a good report. And you know, anytime you do things manually, you run into human error and data integrity issues. And so this Tyler system that we went through the RFP process with, they submitted a proposal. They were the sole vendor that submitted a proposal based on what our technical requirements were. And we did extensive discussions with them. We had lengthy demos with them. A lot of the staff were involved in the demo process as well, so they could review the system at great lengths. And I feel that the Tyler system itself will definitely meet our needs. We did have a quick demo at the Finance Committee meeting a couple of weeks ago, and I think that gave a really good presentation of what we're going to be moving forward with if the board approves this agenda item.
Okay.
Do you want to talk a little bit about, kind of roll through the slides real quick?
Yeah, we can. Cody Gunstenson is our account executive. He provided us with a couple of screenshots of some of the screens that we would be using. The first set of screenshots are a couple of dashboard views, so it would give everybody an idea of what staff would look at when they log into the system. I'll wait till Amelia grabs that.
Sure.
So this isn't the valve leakage that you were talking about going into. So this is completely different picture,
yeah,
unrelated.
This is rosier than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, that's drainage out of control.
Oh, okay. Just, I want to make sure no one misunderstood.
Okay.
Can't you just hit page down?
That's what we want to avoid.
Can't you just narrow down?
Although it does make for a beautiful shot, though.
Yeah. Right. Year round, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be embarrassing if you can't get to the pictures. Oh, there they are.
There we go. Okay. So this is the financials dashboard. This is what users would see when they log into their system. There are several different screens that they can access through here through their smart cards. A lot of this is user setup. So once we get going through the implementation process, you'll see we'll be able to put together some of these screens. Not all of the dashboard is going to be the same. It's, you know, obviously individual to the user. This one here, the example that they provided us, has monthly expenditures, it has monthly project spending, and then open requisition by department. A lot of these dashboards graphs are very useful. We can also do that for utility billing as well. There's a lot of graphs and charts available on the dashboard. This is just one representation of what a dashboard for an employee might look like. Next slide. Oh, go back up one. So this is a second dashboard example. This is actually, I've used Tyler Technologies in a prior employer, and this is very similar to what my dashboard looked like. You have notifications, you have your graphs and charts, you can click on any one of the smart cards and it will take you directly to that item that's located within the system. You can load whatever you want if you want to view it in a quick high level. You can also share these as well. There's an option to share your graph with someone else external to the system. And so, Amelia, if you want to go to the next slide, the users and the residents will also have similar functionality with their dashboards with utility online bill pay. And so they'll see a lot of the same screens. They can do... they can log into their account from the phone. They would be able to access their own dashboard, create their own dashboard. They can view their usage. I'm not sure if that's on the next screen. Is that on the next screen, Amelia?
It's too small for me to see.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's tiny.
Which one is this?
This is showing, I believe, a...
It's a maps.
So this is a capital project list, I think? I don't know.
I think so. It's too small for me to read over here. My old eyes.
It's okay.
But this is also available as well. And there's a lot of functionality for both employees and residents in different ways. And so this is just a quick representation of some of the views that employees and residents will have once we implement the system in full. One thing to note, the contract, we had anticipated the contract would come in under $150,000. So this additional appropriation that we're requesting is twofold. So the contract proposal is a three-year term. The first year includes one-time costs, which are the development and the implementation, and then the portion that is related to ongoing maintenance and support services. And then we have two additional years for that. So the total for the first year is $159,426. We do have $150,000 currently appropriated in the existing budget, in the existing CIP. So we are asking for an additional $9,426 from administrative reserves to cover the cost of the first year contract. And then we're also requesting an additional $80,000 to cover a project manager that's going to assist us through the facilitation of the ERP development and implementation of the project. Does anyone have any questions?
I understand. I'm sorry. I was just trying to do some lightning quick math that just isn't working.
Well, this will do it for you later on.
Oh, perfect.
Well, we have it.
Okay. That's the idea.
Don't hurt yourself.
Again, I'd like to thank the board members for their support. So I understand it. Any questions? I have a couple, but I'll open it up to the board. Any questions? Obviously, the Finance Committee is attuned to this probably more than I am. Paula, just a ballpark number. What is it costing us right now to keep the current systems we have that don't function for us? What are those current costs off the top of your head?
So off the top of my head, we're probably spending roughly $80,000 to $100,000 with maintenance and support, and a lot of that is project management support associated with that. We spend a lot of time reaching out to Great Plains as well as Platinum to provide additional project management support, because there are a lot of glitches that we run into with Great Plains, programming issues with Platinum. So this would significantly reduce that annual expenditure moving to just the singular system.
Understand you answered my question. What is the implementation timeline?
We're looking at 9 months to a year.
So
it's not a light switch, though.
No, understand. Yeah. So we're going to live through whatever we're living through right now through majority of the fiscal cycle coming up. Is that correct?
So the plan is, and this is something that we need to map out. I did speak with Cody Gunstenson about this, and as well as our consultant, Nabil Ferris, through Consult Wisely. The initial implementation would be general ledger, and so we would get that up and running as soon as possible. So the goal is to have general ledger and all of those associated financial processes and modules up and running by the end of this fiscal year, and then taking the next 6 months to do HR payroll and then utility billing.
Okay.
And so that's the plan. So my goal, it may be a bit aggressive, but my goal is to start the new fiscal year, 22-23 fiscal year, off with a brand new system.
So you can't... Then, if you're gonna run parallel, and they won't be parallel because you're gonna wheedle out of them out, but if you're gonna run parallel chart of accounts, and your utility billing module is gonna still be pretty much dependent on on the old system, you're essentially gonna as you keep adding, like beyond chart of accounts into various modules that you dump into the new system, you're essentially going to be running parallel on two different systems, right?
Yes and no. We would want to continue keeping the old systems up just for legacy information, but once we get the general ledger up and running, we would still have some manual data manipulation that we would need to load it into the Tyler system, but it is doable. So it's either via upload, or we might do a temporary integration until we get the utility billing system online. But ultimately, we want to eliminate moving that data from Platinum into Great Plains and running that simultaneously with Tyler. So the goal is to, while we do the implementation, continue running Platinum, but running it in through Encode instead.
So when you, how do you handle that? If you're going to whittle down the chart of accounts in the new system, mm-hmm. how does that correlate to running parallel on Great Plains?
So really the paring down comes into account with the chart of accounts that no longer serves the district. So a lot of the accounts we no longer use or no longer necessary, we will not transfer those over. We are planning on creating a crosswalk. In fact, I have one of my employees working on it right now, trying to determine what we can eliminate from the chart of accounts that we have not used for a lengthy period of time. And we'll get rid of those accounts, then we'll create a crosswalk. Once we start implementing the new chart of accounts, we'll know what the account string structure is, and we'll be able to start plugging those numbers in. And then once we have that crosswalk completed, we've tested it, we'll load the chart of accounts into the Encode system.
So does customer billing, for example, is that still, as you move forward with this integration, is that still completely reliant on Great Plains? Is that whole thing sitting Great Plains and doesn't move until you're ready to dump it into the new system?
Are you referring to the utility billing piece? So the billing side of the house, those are just revenue codes, and it's just a matter of us going in and changing the account string structure within Platinum so that it's comparable with the new system.
So, I mean, here's why I'm asking, because part of, I think, what happened with some of these inquiries, like the last one we had with the one that wound up in Sioux Falls office, is if we have all these manual timing issues mm-hmm. that if somebody misses one, we spend 40 hours dealing with the repercussions of the problems, even if it only relates to 20 customers.
Correct.
So that's kind of what was frightening to me, is that I'm just wondering in what world. I mean, first of all, it's all isolated now and it's imperfect and it doesn't work. But now it's going to be kind of like disassembled and running parallel in different systems and still won't work. But I'm hoping that it's going to work not as bad in the new one as it is in the old one.
I think once we clean up the chart of accounts and move everything over to Encode, a lot of that cleanup will occur. You know, obviously we're not going to eliminate any of the revenue codes that are currently in Utility Star. But a lot of the issue that we ran into with Utility Star has to do with the meters, which is separate from the actual general ledger system. So we're probably going to run into some of that, and we need to keep a closer eye on that until we actually move over into the Tyler Encode utility billing system. And then we'll be able to have a better grasp on it.
Is there anything we can do, or is there a cost we can associate with not moving at lightning speed, but moving a little faster?
John, 9 months is lightning fast for an ERP system.
It is. I mean, I've been involved with several different companies, and I think 9 to 12 months is pretty aggressive. Even though we're a small agency, I think it's doable. We're definitely going to be streamlining and cleaning up a lot of data just so we can get that implemented quickly. But ultimately, we're also at the mercy of the Tyler project management team, too. You know, we need to be cognizant of their scheduling and what their availability is, and we want to try and get that completed in the 9 to 12 month time frame. But I don't foresee it happening any sooner than that. I wish it would.
Is there any advantage to reorienting the implementation so that maybe we're focusing on the billing aspect of it first, customer invoicing? I mean, our main interface with our customers is through the invoicing. And one of the things that demonstrates most clearly that we're not doing what we're supposed to do is when we keep screwing up invoices. So I'm wondering, you know, in terms of priorities, and I don't know from an implementation standpoint, what module has to get inserted before you can actually operate utility billing within the new system. But I'm just asking, is there a way maybe to reevaluate what the priorities are? And I'm not asking you to give up the GL. I'm just saying, if there's other parts of this, like the report writer and all this other stuff that wind up getting dumped in here, is there a way maybe to reorient the priorities?
So certainly.
We looked at the customer invoicing first.
Sure. Well,
and payroll.
See, and typically, implementation schedules, you want your general ledger first. You know, your
right.
chart of accounts
yeah.
is
no,
your
no
hub.
No argument with that.
And from there, you build out the financial piece, which is your AP, payroll, you know, procurement processes. Typically, it's all of those financial functions. Then you have your HR payroll, because those are also connected to your general ledger. And then you move on to the utility billing. It's kind of like the last piece. But we can certainly work with them and see if we can run, you know, HR payroll concurrently or do that, make that a priority over the HR
well,
payroll.
And you know, we don't spend
Christmas
week on this, but
yeah, no, I understand.
Maybe we can certainly do that.
The next meeting we have, we can...
That's exactly where I was going to go with that. How about if you agendize it at your committee level, and then staff understands what you're looking for. I think we need to see if we get it. Once we give that approval, again, what it looks like, and then with the final contract, you can figure out that timing thing that would meet what you need and what the finance committee needs. So I would say, unless the board has any other, I say we kick it over to the finance committee. You work with staff on getting that priority, and then we can figure the contract from that standpoint. So if I don't hear anything. Okay, Paula, thank you. So I'm gonna make a motion, item number 9, consider approval of contract with, now we know who Tyler is, Technologies for Enterprise Resource Planning and appropriate funds for the amount of $97,426. I'm making that as a motion. Can I have a second, please?
I'll second.
Thank you, Director.
Can I ask a question, though, now, before we vote on?
Yes.
What now, with this money, what we've spent, how much of it are we into it? I mean, I'm not looking for the number. I mean, how much more do we have to pay to buy into this? I mean, what's the total? Now that all the pieces of Tyler, how much is Tyler going to get when we turn this thing on and it works beautifully? I mean, how much is it?
I had the same question, and my question is $51,000 to maintain and support. What does that consist of?
So basically that houses all of our information. So this is a software as a service system, so it's all housed in the cloud. So this is basically ongoing tech support. We have access to the Tyler University, which is tons of training materials. They have an annual conference. We have access to project management team. This is just basically...
So this is a lump sum charge.
Correct.
Licensing fee or...
It's licensing, software servicing.
And it's...
Correct.
And it's set no matter how much we use their support system.
Right. And we're also, with this also gives us the ability to take advantage of any system upgrades that they have during that time free of charge. You know, sometimes some of the ERP system developers, you know, anytime they do an upgrade for one company, they don't release it to others unless they charge for it. And so with this one, anytime they do an upgrade to the system, they make any changes, they just push it out to everybody. And so we benefit from others, you know, upgrades or suggestions that they determine would be beneficial for all of their users.
And keep in mind, this is an HR payroll system as well. So as the laws change, Tyler has hundreds of companies, special districts and such like throughout the country, but especially a lot in California. And if the regs change for how we deal with HR and it's appropriate to put into the system, that's automatically loaded. We would not be in the same situation with ABDI or Utility Star if we were in a software as a service environment, which is where you need to be these days. You don't need to house your own data anymore. You don't need your own servers.
Randy, did that answer your question?
Yep, it absolutely did.
Did that answer your question?
I'm good.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Where is the money coming from? It's not coming from reserve, right?
Yes, it is. So we currently have $150,000 that was approved as a CIP for the 21-22. And so the additional is going to be coming from the administration reserves to cover the cost of the project management plus additional overages for the contract that we hadn't anticipated.
Administration, that's just a category in...
It's the general fund.
General fund.
Yeah.
Okay. We should, though... We've been using this system for exactly 25 years. We should have about $4 million reserved at this point for the new one. But we don't know that.
We should give it a plaque as
well,
we retire.
Well, we will
it.
Know it once we get
once
the system.
Get the system.
Right. Okay. Amelia, would you do a roll call?
If we're ready, yes. Director Mabee.
Aye.
Director Janko.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Merchant.
Yes.
Director Pohl.
Aye.
Thank you.
Moving on to item 10, which is the
committees.
It's the new item that was added for declare contract emergency under public contract code section. Everybody knows it, which is 22050A1. It's authorizing general manager designee to execute a contract for the emergency valve replacement. Mike spoke about it in his report. Board members will remember that I received a phone call wishing me happy Thanksgiving from the acting GM, Paula. That I then sent to the rest of the board on the issue we had with the valve. So, in a nutshell, we're addressing it. It's not that we can't. This is just a more efficient, quicker, better use of resources. So that's why it's in front of us today. I do need to point out to the rest of the board, it does take a 4/5 vote to pass, and it's because it's an added on under an emergency situation. So with that said, I'm going to make a motion to accept the item as written. I'm going to ask for a second, and then we can have some discussion. So that's my motion. I'm asking for a second.
Second.
Thank you, Director Janko.
So, is it clear for the board why we're doing what we're doing and those types of things?
That's coming with funding.
I'd like to provide a comment or an update. This is going to impact everybody. You know where the retreats are? Mm-hmm. De La Cruz, right at that turn, and then there's a little street that goes up. These guys are going to come in with pretty heavy equipment. They're going to dig a real deep hole. They're going to shore it up with steel walls, and they're going to go down 15, 18 feet to make this repair. So they'll do traffic management. They'll probably cordon off, you know, half of that street. So it's right, you know, everybody going to and from the south are going to go past this. So there will be a little bit of traffic issue. They will shore it up every night. They'll cover all the holes and stuff so nothing happens there. It's a big deal, and you have to have specialized training to go down in those holes and do that work, and the safety issues are really huge. And, you know, we don't know how long this has been leaking. We may find out that it's been leaking for years, but it just recently has become an issue, and probably it would get worse a lot quicker. Okay. So I applaud Michael for getting his team together and quickly getting a couple bids out there and then putting together a nice explanation of what we're doing.
So I'll kick it to you for a second, Mike. What do you think the timelines are on this?
Well, we need about 3 days of dry weather. It's about a 5-day project. So I'm hoping that we can get it done before the end of December, weather permitting.
Oh, so quick.
Do we need to make alternate transportation route for off the rickety old bridge? Is it
going
to be that? I mean, it'll be.
No, I think some residents will have to go another way. they won't be able to go right on to De La Cruz. I think it's La Pena. Is that the transition street?
I can tell you.
Yeah,
I don't think there's another way out.
Yeah, I was going to say, we might be...
I think there is supposed to be another way out from...
You can get out on a bike, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Well, if not, we can just close one lane.
Okay.
I mean, it would be convenient if we could close the whole thing, but if we can't, we'll just do one lane.
No, and that's fine. So I guess that's where... Obviously, Kelly, you're going to be tapped.
I want to put it on the screen.
For traffic control, some of those types of things. So we might have to assign staff, yada, 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 just kind of going through that. So if I understand correctly.
Tim, do you want me to pull up a video, a screenshot of this?
Yeah, because I still can't picture another way out. Once you're given authorization, we got the contract signed, then it's a go on their sequential. Okay.
It's all about weather.
Okay.
I will say one comment. The reason this is so expensive is because it's so deep.
Right.
And it's actually strange to me that there's a valve. There's a water system that's 15 feet deep. Usually the water is the least deep item. And I think what may have happened is the storm, the sewer got put in. And by the time they got to put the water in, there wasn't enough cover.
Right.
So they had to go in. So that's my only explanation about why it may be so deep.
And please don't use the word strange. We're unique.
Yes, unique. Very unique.
So we're unique here.
Yes.
Okay, so.
So this is De La Cruz, and there's two valves here. One of them ones is we've got one of them. Let me take off the shirt. But basically, it's one of these two valves. And so you're coming off the wooden bridge here, you turn it left. And we think we might end up having to close off this intersection. So the folks.
Okay, so
here,
now, yeah, there is a back way.
There is a back way.
There is a back way going around. It still comes into that loop.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I understand now it's physically on the other street. Okay, that answered my question. Thank you.
And there'll probably be between a 1-2 hour shut off, hope if everything works out right when they swap the valve out.
Right, okay.
So. Right, so these folks here just have to go around the block.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What
this
happened?
Didn't have anything to, I'm sorry.
Okay. No,
but
go ahead.
I'm
go
using
ahead.
Your this didn't have yourself. Anything to do with the incident from the developer who.
No.
Okay.
No, this is a pre-existing.
Okay.
I mean, we had to exercise that valve as part of that incident. But yeah,
and that's what brought it to our attention.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and Thanksgiving.
Yeah. No. And again, thank you, Paula. That was so nice of you to call me. Director Paul, please.
Sorry. I saw in the,
in
the packet where the contractor gave us a quote, and based on his understanding of the problem, and we're going to do it time and materials. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And we're using the rates that's in his quote.
Yes, and he's been told that it's going to be a prevailing wage job.
So if he worked, there's so many hours in there for each item. If it's more or less, it'll just change the quantity. And
if the unique situation turns out where it's actually less than quoted, then that's great.
So my next question: what if it's more?
We have to pay it.
So, do we need to adjust the authorization?
That's probably a good idea. Yeah, I guess we could. What was the attorney saying? Yes.
Yeah, you can make a change to the authorization amount at this point if it
seems like you need some sort of cushion.
Yeah.
Go crazy.
No, that's actually a good idea. I mean, they said 30 to 42, but it wouldn't hurt if we went up to 50 just to play it safe. If the board's
so,
willing
so
to
what,
do that.
What number are you looking for total, Mike?
Give us 50.
That's going to pain Director Pohl a little bit.
What's that?
Where is that?
Well, the contingency was the range. I said 30 to 40.
What happens if it goes over 50? Speaking as a contractor that does time and materials work.
We'll fill in the rest of the hole ourselves.
And I've known to double the budget. Is this something we can do? If we need more money, we can do a email poll.
No, we can't.
Really,
no. Yeah. No. Mr. Shanahan, I mean, I appreciate you staying consistent with Mr. Shanahan.
Say no.
I think what we do is if it goes over this amount, the GM has certain authorization, and hopefully it falls within his authorization, then he can get back to us from that standpoint. In my mind, Randy, that's what I see.
Okay.
As the short-term fix,
yeah,
kinda, if that makes sense.
That makes total sense. And, you know, in the past, if so, for situations like that, I've approved it as a general manager, get the work done, then I report at the next meeting.
Right.
Attorney says, oh, you should have really done that, but we get it
got
done.
Got it. And so that's where I'm thinking that more contingent reserve issue would go to the GM.
So are you going to revise your...
Yeah, I will, but I for my own edification, and Director Butler asked as well, where's the funds coming from?
Reserve.
Okay. So, Tom, with that said, you're limited to a lesser amount, if I'm not mistaken, on reserve fund spending than what you're normally authorized to do.
No, it's the same.
It's the same amount.
Mm-hmm. It's the same. And we attempted to run this through that prior method, but $25,000 was not going to cut it.
Right. Understand.
And okay. We don't anticipate this is going to go crazy on us, but you know that pipe is deep. It's been there a long time, and it's breaking down. So
and we could find more problems other than that valve.
Yeah.
Then I would just ask, just pack down the dirt a little bit harder.
Yeah. If we had to, we could throw together a quick board meeting. I mean, if it goes crazy, we'll probably have to have a
board meeting. But that changes then the scope of work, anyways.
Yeah,
does that
that's
make
right.
Sense?
Yeah.
Because we're here for a specific task. If that task gets completed in something else, then to me, it's a separate issue from that standpoint.
Right. If we find a sinkhole, then yeah, right. That's going to be new news.
Okay. So with that said, my motion is going to change the dollar amount to $50,000. Otherwise, the declaration contracting emergency under Public Contract Code section, all of that stays the same. So that is my new motion. If I could have a second.
Second.
Thank you, Director Janko. Roll call vote. Director Mabee.
Hold on before we get to that. I'm sorry, Amelia. Any other discussion with the understanding, should the contingency then be, it goes to the GM, his authorization, that'll immediately come to whoever the board president is and will notify the board members once something like that is identified. Okay, I'm sorry. Amelia, please, roll call.
Director Mabee.
Aye.
Director Janko.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Merchant.
Yes.
And Director Pohl.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you, staff, for moving forward with that as quickly. And thank you for the board members that brought up the contingency question from that standpoint. I know, and I won't belabor it, but historically, the former person, Mike, I think was using like a 10% buffer on larger contracts. I think on this, it's just different than just putting a 10%, you know what I mean? Just because of what we got going. So, okay. Item number 11, committee assignments. It's a action item, but it's for discussion. I have a signed certified letter from Director Pohl, because he wasn't going to make today's meeting on his request. Do you want me to not go with that because you're here? Oh, okay.
Yes, keep going.
Got it. I'll read what I have here, and I'm not sure why I have it here in front of me. But under Communications Technology Committee, I have Director Merchant and Butler. So that's...
That's good.
Perfect. Thank you. Finance Committee, I've got Director Merchant and Director Pohl.
Good.
Okay. Sorry, Paula. under improvements, I've got Director Janko and Pohl. Okay. Personnel Committee, I've got Director Janko and Mabee. You're fine. Thank you. Parks Committee, it's Director Butler with an alternative of Janko. okay? Yeah.
There's no parks to be considered, but that's
we
just...
Well, it's there's going to be funds coming,
from the
like Riverview. Okay. Yeah, so I would think in the next...
12, 14 years?
Yeah, well...
We'll have
monies. Now, they've already been spent, don't get me wrong, but I would think realistically in the first quarter of the year, there's got to be a sit down from that, and we might initiate it, because I think
if there's a lot of even allocation wise, there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So I would anticipate the first part of the.
You've been slacking off with only one committee.
No, and that's fine, because well, speaking of knuckleheads, security, it's got director maybe, and then. Under our Regional Water Authority representative, it's the general manager, Tom Henning, and then the alternate is myself. That takes me back to vice president and president. What I have written here is president, it says village idiot, director maybe, and then vice president, it's Randy Janko. So I don't know if anybody wants a change, sees a change.
Make a motion.
Somebody has to.
Make it up.
Actually, just make believe it's Venezuela and just nominate yourself.
But see, I can't even vote for myself. I don't even.
It's not required.
Oh, okay, perfect. With that said, I make a motion that the committee's assignments are as stated. Can I have a second, please?
I'll second.
Thank you.
Thank
Amelia?
You, Director Merchant. Director Mady.
Aye.
Director Janko.
Aye.
Director Merchant.
Yes.
Director Butler.
Aye.
And Director Paul.
Aye.
Thank you.
Item number 12, Director comments, suggestions. I'll start. Martin, anything?
No, I have nothing.
Okay. John?
Just when do we... What month do we start the beginning of the 218 notice process, the rate increases, or
it has to be out by like
end of March.
Yeah, end of March.
So it'll be starting the February March time period when we do the budget update. We may add a budget workshop to go through what our budget initially is going to look like, and I'm going to let Paula have a say in all this because I don't want to commit her for what she's, you know, I know she's got it all figured out, but by the end of March we have to do a Prop 218 notice in order have the budget
so
passable for, in June in May.
For the next finance meeting, Amelia, would you agendize competitive rates? I got a bunch of stuff, you saw a lot of it, that I put together on about 12 different water districts, what it costs to live there versus what it costs to live here. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see some of that go out with the 218 notice this time.
Okay.
So.
I see.
Okay.
I think you're going to see a redesign of the 218 notice this year. We'll have staff availability, and there's some pretty nice notices that are coming out, and ours is, you know, like everything else.
There's
invented
all
25
kinds
years
of samples
ago. Yeah.
That are, we should look at.
Okay. Director Butler.
I just had a couple of comments to make about our board and our staff and kind of looking back at things from year end. It feels so much better. We've had so many challenges and so many things to take care of, and we really finally have almost a complete staff.
Mm-hmm.
We're one or two people away from that. So we can take on the things that are coming to us on a regular basis. And one of the big things is development. We haven't dealt with development much in the last, 15 years. And that's going to be part of our jobs in the next at least 5 years, maybe longer. And so that's a challenge for all of us. And I just also would like to compliment the board for being and the staff for being so transparent to the community. I think we're doing pretty well. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Director Janko, Randy?
Well, I'm gonna be contrary. I sit here and listen to Mike talk about the membranes in plant one and how they have to be replaced, and that's a huge ticket. That's a big ticket item.
Yeah.
We've got he's recommending that we've got four lift stations that are in need of major rehab and or replacement. Those are big ticket items. And then we've got a valve that's leaking that's probably in the reserve study listed as a $500 valve that would need to be replaced at, you know, after 20 years of service or something. And here it's going to cost us $50,000 to fix it. I don't feel like, I mean, how long have I been here now? 2 years? I don't feel like I'm gaining on it. Like I know any more today than I did 2 years ago as far as where we stand financially in our reserves compared to what is coming down the pipe. I guess it's just a matter of time. We've got to work our way through these things. But tell me, do we really have the money to replace these membranes? I know we've got X amount of dollars, but how much is in reserves to replace these membranes? How much is in reserves to repair these lift stations? And I know there's not $50,000 in our reserves to repair a busted valve. And so I look at the reserve studies, I look at our finances, it's all interrelated with security, how much we're spending on security out of our tax base versus putting it in reserves. And I guess the bottom line is I just don't think we've made any progress on the situation. I'm hoping we're going to do better.
Thank you. I understand exactly what you're saying. Similar conversations I've had with the GM. It's that what we don't know is kind of that worrisome thing out there. You know, we've asked staff, we're going to get there. It's at the end of the day, we have taken, some will say, very drastic steps in funding that reserve, but it's that unknown of where we're at on those things. And so to that point, Randy, I think in my mind what I see is we get our mid-year projections, see where we're at. We're going to get an update on where we're at on reserves, get a feel for that. Once we then start the budget cycle coming up, which is going to be in the first quarter of the calendar year, that'll show, because we've already given staff direction on funding the reserves, that'll now give us something, if that makes sense, that we didn't have in this last fiscal cycle. So that starts to answer some of the funding unknowns. Now comes the big unknowns that you just talked about. What prior boards did, I don't know, to say, we went to this system, in 20 years it has to be replaced. We know that it wasn't itemized out in the reserves. And so that I see in the upcoming fiscal cycle from the finance side and from the improvement side, really, what are those priorities, and what is that going to look like? And then it still isn't going to answer all the questions, but at least with the funding process we have in place, that the staff's going to come to us with the current direction we've given to staff, we'll be able to at least overlay it with the priorities of the reserves that we have to move forward with. I don't know if that answers your question, but That's kind of what I see in my mind.
I don't think I had a question.
Okay.
Just had a comment.
Nope. Very good. To staff, thank you. You hear us say it, but in all sincerity, we truly appreciate it. And again, all the employees we have, they do good things for us. They do great things for the community, and so thank you on that behalf. With that, I wish everybody a Merry Christmas. Historically, I get coal, so I'm not overexcited about Christmas. But I'm going to move on to item number 13, adjournment. I make a motion. Can I have a second?
Thank you, Director Mabee.
Second. Martin made the second.
Thank you, Director Paul.
I wanted to see what would happen.
Yeah, we all kind of, everyone froze. Do we need a roll call?
Director Mabee.
Aye.
Director Jacob.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Aye.
Director Merchant.
Yes.
Director Paul.
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Amelia.